This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you, Charlie?
Hey, nice to hear your voice.
Nice to be back with you.
You know what? I'm over the moon in several ways.
The moon.
Exactly. Well, you know, I got so distracted and so engaged with those astronauts last night. I went to bed so late because I was just hanging on every little detail, and it went on for hours. Like, why did it? It's so funny. The families say, hold on. They just went around the moon. Why does it take out? Like, putting that flotation thing around the capsule took forever.
Yes. Anyway, the front porch.
Exactly. It all seemed a little rinky-dink to us. But anyway, that's just...
I was fascinated by it. I was glued to the television set for a couple of hours just watching it. Yeah.
But what if it had been really rough seas? It just all seemed to take forever. Anyway, it was still very, very interesting and very well done. I mean, kudos to NASA for being so transparent or so open and so willing to share with the world every detail. Beautiful, beautiful day at my house. First time I'm seeing that in a long time. I'm going to be outside. Sun is shining. There's no wind. It's mild already. We're getting up to about 10 degrees, I think, today. So yeah, it's a good day to be, you know, carefully starting to do a little bit of tidying up, cleaning up. Obviously, you don't want to be walking in the garden. So I'm sure the soil is still way too wet, but certainly it's a time to inspect and to look and to think and to plan. And perhaps I do have a couple of ornamental grasses. I think I'll do a little cleaning up on those because my bulbs are underneath that big mass, so they want to get up and get through. But
we were in the garden a little bit this past week, but we also Gail will say no, I am not cleaning up any leaves because of the bugs that are still hibernating. She said no, I am going to wait.
Well, leave the leaves in the garden. Like, don't clean them up ever. You know, if anything, just mix them in lightly.
We were talking about the leaves in general on the property.
Yeah, but leaves on the lawn. You can always remove leaves on the lawn because it doesn't take long for leaves to kill lawns, like to suffocate the lawn.
Right. Yeah, and we don't have a lot, but we were keeping in mind that you said before that there are still a little bugs and little things like that. They're still hibernating, just still waking up, and so you don't want to necessarily bag it all and toss it away.
No, so keep it on the property, and that's the same with cleaning up the perennials, right? We're kind of slower now to start cutting down things like ornamental grasses or the autumn glory sedum, the late blooming sedum. They have hollow stems, and they are lovely hotel over the winter for some of the really tiny little pollinators, the ones that are waking up on days like today. And of course, if you've got crocuses blooming or anything really flowering on your property, you're going to see lots of action starting now with the little flying critters.
Love it. Speaking of lots of action, we would love for you to give us a call. Okay, so get in line. Numbers to call. If you live in Toronto, here it is, 416-360-0740. If you live outside Toronto, but still within the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. Okay. And I can see the phone has started to ring. Do you actually think I'm going to forget the mantra? Like, really? How long have I been doing this now, Charlie?
I'd suggest.
Oh, welcome back, Dean. 1 week away and he's forgotten the mantra.
Exactly. Exactly. What's my name?
So, yes, we would love for you to call off and call early in one question per call. And our technical operator this morning is Anthony Stathoukos. And so please do let Anthony know if you are a first-time caller, and then I will give you the garden wings, okay? We would love to do that. Do you have any announcements at all or anything?
I do. There's two things going on. Yeah. Yeah. The wings, it's a good time of year for wings, whether it's pollinator, soon to be lots of little pollinators, but also just that visual, getting up there and getting a good view of what's going on.
And if you haven't ever called before, like, give us a call. Don't be, you know, don't be shy. We would love we love first time callers. And as I say, the phones have started to ring. So get yourself in line. And if you've never done it before, today's the day.
Exactly. And don't wait till the end. And also don't think you can, we're not just about questions. We're happy to hear tips and techniques and suggestions. Yeah. You know, I've had a few emails that I've shared with Dean. So we might get into some of, you know, questions about squirrels and that sort of thing. But we're happy to hear from you and what's going on at your place.
Yeah. And don't get me started on the squirrels. Okay. Don't get me started on the squirrels.
Yeah. You would have loved last week's show. We did talk a bit about squirrels last week. Elliot's been going crazy, but that's another story. He's like you, right? Running around chasing the squirrels with a baseball bat.
Oh, my kids think it's hilarious. I go out the front door and go, hey, hey, hey. You know, and they jump out of the feeder.
I know, but so what? Just a quick aside here: baffles, right? A gizmo that hangs off your pole and protects the feeders above.
Yes.
Our baffles, I guess, it kind of slid down a bit over the winter or were too low, and the squirrels got real athletic and they started jumping on top of the baffles and then onto the feeders and then just lying in the feeder, just chowing down. So Elliot's like you, right? He's like out there yelling and screaming and clapping, and then he's out there with a wrench and he's raising the baffle. And
right, yeah.
It's pretty cute, but he's keeping an eye. There's so far, so good. A couple of things coming up. Agincourt Garden Club is meeting this Monday, April 13th. And of course, they meet at the Knox United Christian Education Center, 2575 Midland Avenue at Shepherd, 7:30 p.m. Heather Gray is going to be teaching all about fairy gardens, which is really sweet. I love miniatures. So fairy garden techniques, ways to set up fairy gardens. If you have grandchildren, particularly, or any young people that visit your garden, it's a really sweet way to get them absolutely engaged with what is that? What's going on in that little part of your garden? Barbara Twiner let me know that the Pickering Garden Club will be meeting this Tuesday, I guess it is, the 14th of April, 7 p.m. They meet at the Chestnut Hills Recreation Complex, Valley Farm Road in Pickering. Topic is invasive species and environmental impact. So that's kind of cool. It's one of the Durham Master Gardeners. Everyone is welcome to either of these events, so don't hesitate to show up as a guest. You'll be welcomed with open arms and given tea and biscuits and all kinds it's always great baked goods. I mean, it's totally worth going to Hort Society meetings just for the food. and speaking of going, I'm going to be going to the Brampton Hort Society. Like, that's a bit of a drive from my place. That is on, what day is that? Tuesday, April 28th. So it's still a couple of weeks from now.
Okay.
But if you are anywhere near Brampton, Tuesday, April 28th, I'll be there for a 7:30 presentation on roses. We're going to talk about what roses, why you want to grow roses, how to grow roses, and where to grow roses. That's at the Flower City Commercial, I think it is, campus. That's 8910 McLaughlin Road South in Brampton. So that'll be fun too.
Beautiful. Okay. Well, you know what we're going to do? We're too close to break to jump into this first call, I think. So what we will do is I will give out the numbers again. 416-360-0740. That's the Toronto number. Or toll-free anywhere else in Ontario, 1-866-740-4740, and we'll go to break in a moment. But Charlie, you want to chime in with something?
Yeah. I just want to jump in and say another mantra that's really been happening here on the show since you joined the show, actually, is amaryllis. And I want to remind everybody, never say never when it comes to amaryllis, because though we consider them a Christmas flowering plant, and I pulled some pretty
tropical, right?
Yeah, dormant. Yeah. Well, from South Africa, so it's a southern latitude plant. So I pulled some pretty dormant looking bulbs out of my basement where they'd been for months, and I currently have two beautifully blooming amaryllis in my kitchen in April, if you can imagine. I think they've become northern hemisphere plants. I've had them for so long, and one just coming. So I've got, for my seven pots, I had like two. Now I've got three more coming. So that. It's pretty cool. And it's really pretty. So they're just gorgeous. And so never give up on your amaryllis.
Never give up. Okay. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show. It is the 11th of April. It's hard to believe, Charlie, that in just a few days we'll be middle of the month already. You know,
I know. Yeah. And it's feeling pretty springy here. The birds are louder all the time. And watching some of the behavior, because we do have some, you know, a lot of competition for those female birds. Mm-hmm. So watching what's going on there between the cardinals and the chickadees and all the chasing. Yeah.
Us guys are walking around with our chest puffed up.
No question. So. Pick me.
Love it. Okay, let's go to our first caller. We have Diane on the line, and she's calling from my neck of the woods, Simcoe County. Welcome to the Garden Show, Diane.
Hi, Dean. Actually, I'm calling from Simcoe.
Oh, from Simcoe, not Simcoe County. I see. Okay.
No problem. Simcoe,
where I used to go to see the Christmas lights when I was a kid.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's Simcoe.
Morning.
Morning, Charlie. We have a bromeliad that isn't doing so well right now. Mm-hmm. We went away for 3 months during the winter. We left the temperature in the house at 55. Mm-hmm. And my mistake was I didn't take the inner pot out of the decorative pot.
Oh, yeah.
And when I got home, I noticed the water was right up to the top of the pot.
Oh, so you had somebody coming in and watering for you?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And all the other plants did fine, even the rubber plant and everything else. But this bromeliad, the leaves are fine, but you know, I would say combs or whatever they are on top.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, those are flowers, actually. The comes up out of the center. It's like a pineapple. Bromeliads are, well, apples are bromeliads. So that flower comes up in the center of the plant. Right. So
they're
so that's
kind
turning
of brown and they're kind of brown and dead.
Sure. Well, they don't last forever. I mean, you're lucky to get a couple of months out of them. And the cool temperatures would have prolonged the flowers, but the underwater aspect would not have prolonged. So your sharp little scissors, you can remove those flowers. They will fall over eventually. Main thing for now is when you got home and you discovered all that water in the pot, you right away drained it, I assume, and you've had it sitting out. Yeah, because when we water bromeliads, we don't water the soil. The only watering we do is into the center, the cup of that, furled leaves. So, yeah, so just make sure it's just allowed to dry. No covers, no ceramic outer pots, nothing. Bright sun, allowed to dry. But know in your heart of hearts that the plant you have that you're looking at right now will die. Now that it has flowered, it will die. But baby plants will come off the side of that mother plant. You might get two or three, you might only get one. But either way, if you take a look, you will start to see little poking, growing, pointy, green, furled leaves coming up but on the just sort of on the outside of the base of the plant.
Yeah, they've already started.
Yeah, so let that happen. That's a process. Maybe by July or June, you know, a month or two from now, you can take the whole thing apart with a sharp knife. You can cut away mama and keep the babies, separate them into tiny little pots and grow them up, or even wait till next spring. There's no rush to do that separation. All right?
So that brown stuff on top will just fall off?
Well, it won't really fall. It's in the house. If it was out in nature, it would fall off and blow away. In your house, if it's unsightly, then I'd just get out a sharp pair of scissors and cut it out. It is in the process of decaying and dying. So you're going to have to get rid of it eventually.
Okay. All right. Thank you
good
very
stuff.
Much.
Good luck with
that. Thanks very
much
for the call, Diane. No worries
all
there.
The time, my husband and I. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Diane. Numbers to call, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Don't delay. Give us a call. We're going to Camille now, who lives in Scarborough. Welcome to the Garden Show, Camille.
Hi, thank you. I had a very bad experience with roses. I'm a gardener who likes to think that things can just sort of go on their own. So I love the smell of roses, and I want like shrub roses. So I put in 5 shrub roses, and everything was like in all in a row. They were like on a side of a house, and I got flowers, and then I started getting Japanese beetles. So I did the thing, you know, I took them off, soapy water, all that. And I saw that it was absolutely overwhelming. Now, it took about 4 or 5 years until they were attacking other plants that I had. I had no grass in my backyard, none at all. I had to, you know, get the whole thing resodded. Now, fortunately, my son did the work for me, but I had to completely resod a whole backyard. I had to put that stuff that you put down in the soil. Like with my son, it was hardly, he raked away whatever little was left and then put that chemical on and that kills them. And then he put the sod on, you know. I still have patches where, I don't know, they just don't want to give up. Because my backyard did not have any weeds. Mm-hmm. And they just love grassroots. So I think I drew them from there. And I have to be honest, I mean, I love roses, but my experience, I took the roses out. I put in some kind of a winter evergreen, you know, 5 winter evergreens side by side. And I haven't seen Japanese beetles, but I've got patches in my soil that I think is. So I just, I don't know, if I had known, I wouldn't have gone through the expense.
Right, of buying the roses and falling in love with the idea. Well, some roses are more susceptible or resilient when it comes to Japanese beetles. Some, like of the named roses, varieties of roses. Not all roses obviously taste the same or smell the same to a Japanese beetle. And I agree. They are very, very frustrating insects. They are, they're aliens. They came obviously from Japan years ago. We only really started seeing them in southern Ontario, about 25 years ago. And they've slowly but surely been spreading. And of course, what happens after we get the, mild and climate change, milder winters, the Japanese beetles are breeding like crazy and surviving winters better than we would have ever hoped. Now this winter, despite all that snow, we did have some pretty cool temperatures. So hopefully the population is a little bit lower. The challenge and the way you've explained it is good, that you sort of first saw the Japanese beetles on the roses, which are the beetles, the shiny little kind of pretty actually beetles that annihilate the roses. They eat everything. But then you realize there was a whole thing happening with your lawn as well. So who eats the lawn are the grubs. So that's the immature stage of the beetle. So we call them grubs. They're white. They're very ugly. They're in the shape of the letter C. So what we have to do is control the grubs. And now is not the time to control them. Let the skunks, let the raccoons, the starlings will eat them. They're going to make a mess. There's nothing you can do. You can't kill grubs now, but you can kill grubs in August and early September. So that's when people like your son who helped you get out the nematodes, we get out the grub be gone stuff. We get to work on killing grubs in our lawns and gardens then to lower the population for the following year. I know that's the thing with insects. We have to work with their cycles. And that's the problem with grubs is that when they're adults, they are eating like crazy, copulating like crazy, and laying eggs like crazy. And it is just early in the season, and I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about them as our season continues here in Southern Ontario with our gardening. But no, they're very, very frustrating. Pick and drown, pick and squish. There's no easy way to get rid of the adult beetles once you've got them on the property. And you're right, they do love roses, but they love lots of other things as well. I've always had my beans eaten with the, you know, the beetles floating around. So you really have to watch for them. And it becomes a full-time job, picking and squishing, I'm sorry to say. But controlling them is challenging but doable. Thanks so much for calling.
Thanks for the call there, Camille. Here are the numbers again, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Do give us a call. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We're back here on The Garden Show. We're
singing.
We were talking about robins, and I remember that Robin in the Rain was a fellow song that I learned like in grade two. And every time I see the robins dancing around the lawn, that song jumps into my head.
Yeah. Because we were also saying that when you do find grubs at this time of year, when you're in your garden and you find those ugly little grubs, throw them out onto the driveway or out where the robins will eat them.
Yeah. There's a few different, not just robins, but I would imagine there are some other birds that would quite love the grubs for the protein. They would like that. So not me.
Yum.
Wow. You know what? Let's go to our first caller, our next caller. And then what we'll do is I have an email that I want to go over with you as well. But we've got Rita in Richmond Hill. Welcome to The Garden Show, Rita.
Good morning. I need help with my Christmas cactus. I got two of them last fall at Canadian Tire for a dollar each. They were dying. So I bought them home.
I love those flowers.
I know. They're so pretty. Well, you should see. They're like a tree. They got so big now. But the sad thing was last year, they bloomed at the end of November, first week of December, just full, but then gone. So now I'd like to protect them for next Christmas. I don't know where to keep them because they're getting so big. They're in a window with a little sun and the heat going up, going over them. Charlie, please tell me what to do. Can I put them in the rec room where it's a little cooler, darker?
So that's challenging because cooler is good. Cooler will slow down flower bud. It'll slow down the flowers popping and dropping. So you can maintain flowers on any flowering plant for longer if you can keep it cooler. So cool is good, but dark is not when it comes to Christmas cactus. They want bright. What I would do if I were you is I would take those Christmas cactus once we are frost-free outside. I would put them outside. I wouldn't put them into pure sun. I'd put them probably somewhere where they're a little bit sheltered. No hot afternoon sun, maybe morning sun, like a eastern location, northeastern location. Nice and bright, and let them live outside all summer. Now, do not rush to bring them in the fall. If you want them to bloom for Christmas and not November, it'll be a bit challenging, but you'll leave them out until as long as you can. They can take some frost. They can take, -1, -2. Maybe if you have a porch, you could at that point move them up onto a porch. So again, they're a little more sheltered from the cold wind or cold weather. And you're going to leave them outside as long as you can. As soon as we're getting down to, -3, -4, you're going to bring them in the house. They're going to be covered in buds. You're going to bring them in the house. And that's where you're going to go into your cool location and no water, right? You don't want to kill them with too much water at this point. So into your cool, unheated, whatever that was, bedroom, basement, and leave them there for maybe 10 days, 2 weeks, and then out into your sunny windowsill. No hot air blowing on them. Get a vent deflector so that you can not blow hot air and keep them as cool as you can in your sunny location, and that will prolong the flowering period. So you're just going to have to play with temperature and light more than anything. It's like me having amaryllis blooming in April, like they were supposed to bloom at Christmas. So, we try really hard to get plants to coordinate with our calendars, but it doesn't always work perfectly.
Okay, what you told me to do, put them away. I'll do that. I'll put them outside. How much water am I supposed to give them? Like a little
feel the soil. They're a cactus, but they're a forest cactus. So they are designed or evolved in a very moist environment in the sense of it being humid and organic, etc. So what you'll do is feel the soil. When it starts to feel a little dry on the surface, don't water. Feel again the next day or the day after that. When it starts to lose its sponginess, you want that soil to always have a bit of sponginess. Water. And when you do water, water thoroughly. So the water drains right through out the drainage holes, drain those pots, you know, then put the saucers back underneath. And so depending on temperature, you might water once a week. You might water once every 3 weeks.
Oh, lovely. Okay. But I'll tell you, okay. I couldn't believe it. Two little dead cactuses. I took them.
And you saved them. Good for you.
Thanks, Rita. Thanks for the call. Numbers to call, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. In my opinion, Rita won the battle there. She bought them for a buck each, and she got them to flower. Good for her. Great.
Well, yeah. But that's the funny thing we always say about gardeners. Love them. They're so creative, such hard workers, and so cheap.
Yeah. Oh, me too. I love finding stuff like that and making them bloom. I love it. I bought a pot of mums the other day that had been marked down, and it was just because they were sort of in an Easter pot.
Right.
And so they were marked down.
They were done.
One of the grocery stores, and they had, I picked the one that had the most amount of buds that weren't open.
Oh, you are so clever.
Yeah. I paid $2.99 for this thing. And in fact, I got it up to the, and it came through at $11.99, and I said, oh, those are marked down. So she went and checked, and she said, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry. I said, no, I would have checked too. But $2.99 for a pot of mums, I thought, I'm not going to argue.
Yeah, it brightens up your kitchen or dining room or whatever.
I love it. Yeah. Love it. But yes, I picked the one that had the least amount of blooms, but the most amount of buds. So I
Good.
Longevity.
Oh, you are such a good student, my little grasshopper.
Diane from Elmvale sent you an email. Says, good morning. There are three in my garden. Sorry, this is Rose of Sharon. There are three Rose of Sharon in my garden and all bloomed beautifully last summer. Could you kindly give me advice if they should be cut back in the fall or spring or not at all? And she says she listens every single Saturday. Diane in Elmvale.
All right. I'm just, of course, I mark all these things so I'll be able to find them. Oh, there it is. Rose of Sharon. Diane, got it. Yeah. So, okay. Rose of Sharon. We do love them. They're late blooming flowering shrubs. So, you know, the exact opposite of forsythia and magnolia and lilac, which are early blooming, we have our late blooming flowering shrubs, Rose of Sharon. The rule of thumb when you're thinking about pruning shrubs, think about when they bloom. We always do our pruning, particularly big pruning, you know, massive tips and all kinds of for size. We do all our pruning after they bloom, right after they bloom, preferably. So with the spring bloomers, the lilacs and magnolias, we're going to go to town on those after they finish blooming in the next month or so, 6 weeks. Whereas the Rose of Sharon, which blooms in August and September, you can cut it in the fall. Generally, though, I don't. I just let them be for the winter because it doesn't really matter. The difference, like they're dormant in the winter. So in terms of cutting them right after they flower, you could cut them in October or you could wait till now. Do your pruning in April because that's basically the same as October when it comes to Rose of Sharon. But again, to make your life a little easier, you can wait until the little buds start to show. Very slow, very late shrub. It'll look dead for longer. Your forsythia will be finished blooming and your Rose of Sharon has nothing going on. And then all of a sudden you will see little green buds. So that's when we do all our pruning. And I would prune. They get pretty big. They can do a takeover. Actually, I'm looking across the street at my neighbors and she was asking me a month or so ago if I'd come and help her prune her Rose of Sharon, which has gotten too big for where she planted it. And I was like, yeah, I'll come over with my pruners one day in the spring and we'll chop it all down and start again, right? It's basically just, you know, you are the master. You choose, you know, what's going to grow, you know, 2 feet roughly every year, 18 inches. So bring it down now in the spring so that it's where you want it to be, the height, et cetera, in September, you know, so add that 18 inches in and there it will be and it'll look beautiful. And, you know, you want it at eye level. You don't want your Rose of Sharon 15 feet tall. It doesn't make sense usually.
Okay, great. Thanks for the email, Diane. And if you have a question that you want to forward by email, Charlie's email is the following, c.dobbin, so D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. We're going to go to our next caller, which is Heather in Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Heather.
Hello, everybody.
Hi. Good
morning. Time. Hi. The worm casting sale is back.
Ah.
I love worm casting. Okay.
This is Heather Sinopoli.
Yes, from Riverdale.
I know, Riverdale Hort Society.
Right.
So tell us about the worm casting sale and how do people get it? They want it. Everybody wants bags of worm castings.
I want it.
I know. I know. You can come and get it then. All right.
Yeah.
So all our members have been advised. And right now, a volunteer is working at sending out a reminder to all the people who gave us permission to email them again. Express consent is a special word, I guess. And it'll be on our website tomorrow, if not today. And what we're telling you is it's the same as last year, $15 a bag. The bag weighs about 25 pounds, pretty heavy, but not undoable. Mm-hmm. And we're asking you to come and order them. Sorry, order them online. Mm-hmm. And then you come and pick them up. There's a choice of two different days. So I'm not going to give you tons of information right now, but I will give you our email order line address, and you can send an email and get the information and see if it works for you.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, Heather, may I ask Heather a question?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Heather, why do we love worm castings?
Castings.
Castings, that's right.
Why do we love them?
We love them because they're totally organic. They don't smell. They don't burn when you apply them outside. Most people don't use them inside because there is a possibility you might have a baby worm come out now and again. But it's just good nutrition, slow, environmentally safe. It does not smell. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, and what is worm castings?
Well, it's poop from the little worms, of course.
Exactly. So it's worm poop. These worms are farmed, right? So it's worm poop, 100% organic. And we're always getting questions about how do I add organic matter to my soil? Do I go and buy bags of manure? This is an example of buy a bag of worm manure or two or three.
Right.
Heather, I'll be sending my brother. I did this with you guys a couple of years ago. My brother's in East York. He's in sandy soil. He always needs to add organic matter because his soil is just depletes so quickly because of the sandiness. And I'll be sending him for 4 or 5 bags maybe because he'll say to me, but what do I do? What do I do? I'm like, you go and you pick up those bags I ordered for you and you put them in your garden.
Love that. Okay.
Thanks, Heather. What's the email?
Okay, I'm going to read this so I don't make a mistake. It is RHS Worm Castings, with an S at the end of castings, @gmail.com.
Perfect. I love it. All right, okay. And I'll remind everybody. So the pickup date's usually in May, right?
Well, there's one towards the end of April, April the 25th, and then there's one on May the 9th. That's the day before Mother's Day. Wouldn't that be
perfect?
A great present for your
perfect
mother?
Gift. There you go, Dean. Oh, Gail would be so
Thank
happy.
You. I know she would. Thanks, Heather.
You're very welcome.
Thanks,
bye,
Heather.
Guys.
Okay, we're going to jump into our next call. We got Rob from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Rob.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I was talking last week to Charlie about my peppers. My question is now, Charlie. They're like 2-3 inches seedlings, and they're under grow light. But my question to you is not like this week the weather's getting nice. When do I, like, can I start hardening them off? I know, like, they say 2 to 4 weeks before you plant them, but because the weather's going to be nice, is it possible to bring them out, or you still leave them underneath the grow lights until 2 to 3 weeks before you plant them?
Oh, right. It's a great question. So, every plant is different in terms of what makes it happy. If you told me you had kale under your grow lights right now, I'd say, yeah, you're right. You could start hardening off the kale, take it out for an hour a day, slowly introduce it to the real world, and be planting it out in the next 3 weeks, but not peppers. Peppers are a hot weather plant. They not only need hot temperatures, they need hot soil. So even if the weather was, you know, 80 degrees right now and beautiful and sunny, I would say no, don't even think about putting those peppers outside or anywhere near the ground until that soil has warmed up.
Yeah, no, I understand that part. All I'm just saying to, like, bring them out for a couple hours and bring them, like, because the weather's going to be good this week. That's what I... You know, bringing them out even though, like, just for an hour or so because the weather this week is going to be warm, and then bring them back in because they get the light from the outside, or do I still need underneath the grow lights?
It just depends how much time and that much time you want to devote to fiddling with the peppers. If you start hardening off now, there's nothing wrong with that. You're right. The weather is perfect, but you're not putting them outside in the ground for probably at least 5 or 6 weeks. So know that in your heart of hearts. There's no rush to harden them off starting now. You only need 2 to 3 weeks to harden off. And if they're not going out permanently for 6 weeks, why not just keep them inside and let them be little houseplants for the next few weeks, and then worry about getting them, start that hardening off a few weeks from now. So it's just up to you. I mean, you can start taking them in and out and, you know, pretend they're your little dogs. Take them for a walk every day, a couple times a day, and just take them out, bring them in, back and forth. But you're going to do that for quite a long time still.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, I don't want to ruin them. They're looking good, and I just want to make sure when the time comes, yeah, do the right thing. So okay,
I keep them inside for now. If it was me, thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Rob. Okay, thanks for the call. Numbers to call: 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Seems to me like Rob needs like a wagon to take them for a ride around
the block. Exactly. Not yet, though.
Get some steps in.
I know. I think so. Well, like, he's clearly hovering over his peppers. I think he's called every week for the last couple of weeks. It's great.
I would be doing the same thing. As you say, lots of people are chomping at the bit because we that beautiful warmer weather, the sunshine, and we want to get them out. You know, my amaryllis that bloomed has put out one of its solar panels right now. It's got that leaf.
Good.
And I was thinking the same thing. I thought, I should move it outside. Not yet. It's too cold. You know, but I will, you know, eventually we'll move it outside for the summer to beef up the bulb again.
For sure, but not yet. I mean, we're just too excited. It's only April 11th. I mean, I'm lucky because I have a screen porch and it faces east. So it gets nice morning light and it gets warm. And, you know, after a cold night, it warms up with the sun inside. And I use that as the first step to the hardening off at my place. But I'm not anywhere near that. But then again, I've been a bit slow to plant seeds this year. So I've got some pretty nice looking peppers too, you know, Rob. But they're under grow lights, so they're not going anywhere.
Gotcha. Okay. Listen, we're jumping into our next break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show. Let's jump right into our next caller. We have Vicky from Hamilton. Welcome to The Garden Show, Vicky.
Hi there. Charlie and Dean especially, because I'm the one who's trying to get you some spider lilies.
Vicky, yeah. I know who you are. How are you? The spider lilies. Vicky, have you called before?
Spider lilies, ever helpful husband. I put him in charge of watering the upstairs.
Have you called before, Vicky?
Sorry?
Have you called before?
No, I'm a newbie.
Oh, there you go.
I remember when we chatted, you said you hadn't called. I said, call. There you go. Yeah.
Welcome.
Terrified, but here we go. I have spider lilies from Barbados. We brought back bad, but from the early 80s probably. Mm-hmm. And I repotted them last fall, and they were doing okay, and my husband overwatered.
Okay. So what do they look like now?
Blame it on him. Well, I've had to pitch a few of the bulbs because, well, one was just soggy, no roots.
Mm.
I've sprinkled cinnamon around it. I've added more dry dirt. I'm even wondering about maybe trying to dry it out a little bit more.
And I know if they're really overwatered, like really soggy, and one of the things you can do is take the whole root ball out of the pot, carefully move, like just with your bare hands or gloves on, but with your fingers, move the soil away from the roots, away from the bulbs, and smell the soil. Like you'll learn a lot from the smell and texture, obviously, but if it's really swampy smelling, then you know you need to get rid of that swampy soil, because what happens, that smell is anaerobic respiration. So it's where a lack of oxygen has caused decomposition, and it's got a distinctive smell. So
yeah, it stinks.
And the lack of oxygen is because there was no air in between the soil particles. It was all water. So, yeah, I mean, that can, and you just lay those bulbs on newspaper, let them dry down before you pot them back up. Of course, you know, you'll get them back into the situation, the environment you had them in, the right kind of sun, the right kind of temperature, and you'll water as required. But they can be a little bit tricky, I guess, in terms of when they flower and how to care for them. But they're a very cool plant. You know, very unusual, not the kind of thing that you can easily get a hold of here, though you might, it's hard to say. I'm wondering if maybe you could get some here without, you know, doing some kind of illegal from Barbados situation. So yeah, that's what I would do. I'd certainly get the plants out of the soggy soil and get them dried down as a priority.
Okay.
All righty.
They're pretty buggy.
Oh, how do you mean buggy? There's like fungus gnats?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Again, fungus gnats are insects that live in soil and eat fungus. We have fungus in our soil when our soil is constantly wet. So that's another good reason to get that, eliminate that soil and get out those little sticky sticks we've talked about before, available at any garden center or home store. Little yellow, sticky, like flypaper idea. And any of those little gnats that are flying around will die because they will get, they're very attracted to yellow and they'll fly into the tape and die. And that will ultimately eliminate anything that's flying around. But yeah, it's, yeah, you're just going to have to sort of go through some steps. It sounds like you have a pretty good idea what to do though. Like, you know what the problem was. So now it's just a matter of reversing some of the symptoms that you're experiencing from that overwatering. And of course, you're going to have to tie your husband's hands behind his back and not let him water anything ever again. Okay.
Thanks so much for the call, Vicky. Call us back in a couple of weeks and let us know how things are going. Okay. And so that would be wonderful. And we are going to jump into a next break. We have some more callers on the line, but we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We're back here on The Garden Show, and yeah, our next caller, I do believe, has a question about something that we just noticed is coming up in our garden, and I love it. Willa from Southampton, welcome to The Garden Show, Willa.
Hello.
Hey. Morning.
Yep. What do you got?
My rhubarb. We had wonderful rhubarb for years and years, and the last few, three years now, it doesn't bloom much, although if it does, I cut the blossoms out. Mm-hmm. It's almost like something might be eating it. A little later in the season, the stalks are tiny and almost hollow. Mm. And I don't have the option of moving it anymore, really. I just don't know what to do. I don't know what its problem is.
So, you know what, we have had this call from a couple of people in the last few years. And I think what happens is we tend to take our rhubarb for granted. We just plant it. It's great for a couple of years and we ignore it after that and expect it to be perfect all the time. I have a feeling that what you need to do is top dress around the rhubarb with some quality organic matter. So if it means going into Riverdale in Toronto and getting some worm castings, or going to your local farm or garden center and picking up bags of composted manure, whether it's sheep or cattle, or maybe you have your own homemade compost, either way, that rhubarb needs a little bit of TLC. It also, could it be in a little more shade now than it used to be, like our trees growing bigger around it and now it's a little shadier?
No, it's the full sun. It wouldn't get any shade till very late in the day.
Okay, that's good. It should be in full sun, but it generally will do fine. It's really probably coming down to the soil. It does love a fertile, highly organic kind of soil. So if it, you know, make sure there's no weeds growing around it, make sure there's good air circulation around it. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, it's just more a matter of it, with a fork, kind of roughing up the soil a bit. And even if it's only a half an inch of compost, get that around in the spring and the fall every year. And I think you'll find it'll do better.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm a first-time caller.
Oof. Love it. Welcome, there welcome. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
You're and welcome. Thank Charlie you.
Says, don't be a stranger.
Okay.
We have one more caller on the line, Wilma from Holstein, Ontario. Welcome to the Garden Show, Wilma.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
I just wanted to add a little tip to what you said about the Christmas cactus going outside.
Yeah.
Just beware that the critters love it.
Oh. Like the squirrels kind of critters? Or?
I really don't know. I was blaming rabbits, but I don't know. I put mine a few years ago. I had one, and I put it out the front side of the house, which is the east, under a shrub. And lo and behold, by September, there was nothing left to bring in.
Could have been groundhogs, too. Okay, so what's the moral of that story?
I have a problem with them around because we are in a private lot, but there is rabbits, I know, and of course, yes, we've got squirrels and chipmunks, too. So somebody had it dined on it anyway.
All right, good point, a very good point. So I guess the moral of that story is, don't be taking a pot of Christmas cactus and putting it down at ground level, particularly in a sort of a screened area under a shrub. Keep it where you can see it. Keep it above ground, even if it's up on a couple of bricks on your patio, just so that it's not down at the perfect dining level for whoever might be popping around the garden.
The dining level.
Thanks a lot, Wilma.
Thanks a lot,
good,
Wilma, for
good
the call.
Point.
Charlie, you wanted to speak briefly about a couple things, including brown evergreens. You wanted to chat about that.
Well, I did want to just say that yesterday when I was driving around Prince Edward County, now that the ground is thawing, things are greening up, lawns are turning green. We don't have any leaves out yet, but I am seeing some very brown evergreens, and that we do start to see that now. So those evergreens probably were green all winter, but now that, you know, the moisture is becoming available because the frost has come out of the ground, I'm seeing a whole bunch of rusty cedars. And this is just as I'm driving, it's not like I'm in people's backyards, but I thought, oh, you know what? That is such an example of the drought we experienced here last summer. Mm-hmm. So when you have evergreens on your property, particularly cedars, which are water-loving plants, you really, really have to water them in season. If they go into winter with low water levels around their roots and, you know, frost freezing happens, and there they are all winter, and the wind, we have it, we're very windy here, and that's probably what killed them, was lack of water in the summer and big winter wind, and now they're dead. Like, they're just really dead. I saw a few spruces. Mm-hmm. Also, they're just rusty brown dead. It's get out of chainsaw, get them out of there. They're not going to be revivable. So just something to remember if you've got something like that happening at your place, or we get into another droughty summer.
Okay. And the other thing you mentioned is fertilizing household plants. It's something I don't do. I have to admit, I do not ever fertilize my indoor plants. And I wonder if I should. So we were chatting about that before the show.
Well, see, the reason why is because our indoor plants are planted into potting soil. It's not even soil. It's a potting mix. It is usually a peat-based, completely inert media. It's just something that the roots can grow in.
So it's got nothing in it.
Got
no good.
Nothing. It's got no worm castings. Like Heather was saying, people don't usually use it inside. So it's got, if we did, I mean, sometimes people will add organic material to their potting mixes, but generally, if out of the bag, there's nothing going on. So first 6 months, first 2 years, you're good. After that, all of a sudden the plants aren't really looking as good, growing as well, really being as perky and beautiful as you'd like them to be. So don't hesitate. This is the time. Start your regular fertilizing of your indoor, any potted plants. Start now and just put it on the calendar every 6 weeks when you're watering. Add some fertilizer to the water and water. And it could be all purpose, you know, 20-20-20. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. Or it could be, you know, a flowering plant. I did this yesterday. I'm with my orchids. I dunked them all into a pail of fertilized water, and the extra goes onto my amaryllis and to other plants as well. So I'm trying to remember to do it myself. So I thought I'd better remind everybody to try and do it too.
Okay. And very quickly, Dean has a question. I have a Hoya carnosa.
Okay.
Which I love. And it needs to be repotted. I've purchased now a repot. Is it too early to do this? Should I wait a little bit to repot it?
No, are the roots growing out the bottom of the pot?
No, I think it's a little root bound, like it's been in this pot and it's actually broken on the edge. It's just, so I haven't gone up a big size, but it's just, I feel that it needs to be repotted. It's been a number of years in the same pot.
Okay. Yeah. Cause they are pretty small rooted plant. You could do it. You know what? Just pick a day when you've got some time to lay out newspapers and do a proper job, put it into a pot with drainage holes, of course, preferably a terracotta pot, which again will allow just that much more air circulation. Thanks, Dean. Good question.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anthony. Couldn't have done any of this without your help and all the great callers. Keep it coming. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.